This is All Things Considered on WNYC. I'm Jamie Floyd. It's been more than a month since the stabbing death of Barnard freshman Tessa Majors in the early evening hours of December 11th. The grim story of the 18-year-old woman staggering up the steep steps of Morningside Park in search of help was a jarring one in a city that has enjoyed a period of declining murder rates. The story took another dreadful turn when a 13-year-old boy was arrested in connection with her killing, followed by two 14-year-olds. Now a grand jury has reportedly been impaneled to decide whether those two boys should be charged as well. On this installment of The Docket, the thorny but related issues of how the juvenile justice system operates and how the press covers major crimes involving kids.
People have this view that in the 1800s, all these well-meaning liberal advocates came together to invent a system that would be good for children. That's not the story.
That's Jeffrey Butts, head of John Jay College's Research and Evaluation Center.
The real energy, if you read the historical record, was law enforcement, prosecutors, and police who were long irritated by young kids getting away with serious offenses.
Well, the first boy who was arrested in this case was 13 years old.
And that's Eileen Grinch. She's a reporter covering juvenile justice with the news site The City.
And he is currently detained. He allegedly, according to the police, said that he and two other boys were involved. The other two boys were brought in question, but the police quickly let them go. They both actually had lawyers present during the questioning.
So as things currently stand, the 13-year-old is the only one who has been charged so far, and he's the only one who didn't have a lawyer with him when he was questioned. He'll go through the juvenile justice system instead of adult court because he's a minor, and since he's accused of taking part in the robbery that led to her death, but not in the killing itself. Jeffrey Butts, let's take a step back and look at the system more broadly. When are juveniles treated as adults under New York law?
It varies by age and by the offense that's presented to the court initially. So you could be very young, for example, 13, and if the charge involved is a homicide, you could be bound over immediately to the adult court. Otherwise, it's usually a decision that's made by a judge or a prosecutor. So it varies by age and by offense.
Eileen, when a young person is suspected of a violent felony, the case can quickly become sensationalized, which can in turn skew our perceptions of how prevalent crime actually is. Give us some context. How common are juvenile arrests these days?
Well, juvenile arrests on the whole are dropping in New York City, especially in the case of violent crimes like this. But when a case like this comes out, it draws a lot of parallels, for instance, to the Central Park Five. It was interesting to see. I ironically was on vacation when the news broke. And so as I watched it from afar and my editors were putting pressure on me, as many editors around the city were putting pressure on other reporters to write a story about this, I had some literal space to look at what was happening and unfolding and ask myself, how can we add to this conversation and how can we avoid kind of the pitfalls that have historically hurt people in juvenile justice reporting in New York?
You mentioned the Central Park jogger case, 1989, obvious comparisons being made, young white woman victim murdered in a park at night, a group of teenage boys of color suspected, police under intense pressure to solve the case. And that case, of course, eventually resulted in the five boys there being exonerated, but only after years in prison. So, Eileen, say a little bit more about how that history affects your coverage of this case and whether you think the media at large has learned any lessons on how to report on these sorts of stories.
You know, one of the initial conversations I had was with a person who had been part of that original Central Park Five coverage. And this person told me about how the language they used and the pressures they were under led journalists, as often happens in these kind of emotionally charged situations, to throw wood on the fire of racial tensions. This person told me that it was one of the greatest regrets of their life. Mm. And so as I stood back and had that conversation fresh in my mind, my editors did too. They were around during that time. And we wanted to be really careful to contextualize and to be really cognizant of the racial backdrop of the story and think about how can we add to this? How can we inform and educate as well as cover it kind of in a daily news tense?
And as you say, so many people are aware of that historical context, including, of course, NYPD Commissioner Dermot Shea. Here he is commenting on the case and the age of the suspects at a press conference back in December.
What we traditionally will see is 16 to 18, much more common. 13 is young. I mean, I think it should disturb any New Yorker when we have a child involved in something this serious.
Now, this is the first major test of the department since he took over as commissioner. It comes after, though, New York's Raise the Age law fully went into effect in October. It raises the age of criminal responsibility to 18, meaning we don't automatically criminalize kids who are 16, 17 years old. Jeff, do you think the new law is affecting the way in which law enforcement is handling the case so far?
It could be. One challenge, you ask if we've learned anything, if the media's learned anything in the past few decades. I don't think so. I don't think the media's learned much, and I don't think law enforcement has learned much. We're a little more reluctant to be overtly racist now, but I think in general, crime, especially young people involved in crime, is still used to generate policy change. So the police will note that, like the commissioner did, when we see a child involved in a serious crime, isn't that horrible? The advocates will use other cases, people murdered in Rikers, for example, to talk about shutting down Rikers. Both sides use these horrible, notorious cases to make their point. The Raise the Age law actually was enacted at a time when crime had been coming down. So juvenile arrests under 16 had come down about 70% among misdemeanors and about 40% for felonies in the five prior years. So in general, we were seeing a decline. My concern is what happens if those numbers start to climb again. So when you see the public reaction and the political reaction to one case, if we start to see those numbers come up again, I worry for the sustainability of some of the good policies that have been implemented in the past.
Jeffrey Butts is a professor at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Eileen Grench is a reporter for the news site, The City. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.